Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast joining you. The Bucks have lost two of their first three games of the year. They had a kind of an exciting kickoff in Boston before back-to-back blowouts. One at home where they did the blowing out against the Golden State Warriors. One where they were at Madison Square Garden and had the blowing out administered to them. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast. And on the other line is Bucks beat writer Jim Ozarski. Jim, we talked on the last podcast. You kind of foretold this. You said that the Bucks might start off on shaky ground, that people shouldn't panic, that they didn't have a lot of time together. There's a lot of new faces. They're not going to be clicking on all cylinders. Needless to say, people can take that advice, but Bucks fans are going to freak out when they see a 20-point loss to the New York Knicks, the lowly New York Knicks. That is not supposed to happen to championship-caliber teams. One game, you know, we could say it's just one game, but that's what we're left with most recently. The Bucks go to New York, get clubbed under the cover of darkness because the Packers were playing at the same time and winning, so at least they had that going for them. But is this kind of what you were expecting in terms of, you know, this team maybe just not clicking on all cylinders out of the gate?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that. I'm still surprised they lost to the Knicks. I mean, the Knicks are a bad team.
Currently. Who gives up 130 points to the Knicks, Jim?
Yeah, I think that's probably the bigger issue for Mike Budenholzer and his bunch at this point, JR. I mean, look, even the Celtics game, you know, that's a good team, but to be down 17 points going into the fourth quarter, that's not where you want to be either. You know, and having the, for as, you know, close as the final score was, it you know, it took a pretty substantial effort to get back to that point, right? So, yeah, I you're right. I think the loss to the Knicks is the surprising one. But overall, you know, look, this group was saying before the regular season started, JR, that they didn't like their defensive effort in the first three preseason games, you know, against Dallas and New Orleans. And, you know, they said, well, we're not just going to be able to flip a switch. Well, clearly that hasn't happened. And now I think as they head to Miami for these back-to-back games, it's not so much a switch. Well, could be a switch at the pick and roll. Hey. But, you know, something has to kind of happen here on the off day and then maybe effort-wise at American Airlines Arena.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the Miami Heat have been the team's bugaboo, has been the team's bugaboo the last couple seasons. Certainly in the playoffs, we know that part. But even in the regular season, this team gave the Bucks a lot of problems. Even the year before that, this Heat team has been problems for the Bucks. They're a physical team. They've been able to match what Milwaukee's bringing to the table. I think people are maybe starting to envision a 1-4 scenario start to the year. Let's say that happens. Let's say worst case scenario, they lose these two games in Miami. They start 1-4. Obviously, it is too early to panic, but it's also, I mean, five games out of 72 that's creeping up on a sample where you can start to draw some conclusions. I mean, this is a team that was on a 70-win pace last year, and I know everything that's happened to this team has happened to this team, but I don't know. If they're 1-4, are you panicking? Are you thinking maybe this team isn't like a top-tier playoff team after all?
No. I get, you know, in a 72 game season, what, let's just round it up and say 8 games is 10%, you know, and that's probably where you can start to maybe use a sample size. I mean, I wrote, you know, if you head over to jsonline.com to preview this Heat series, where I said 3 games is not enough to draw a sample size to make any conclusions. Like, I think Bryn Forbes is going to do better than what he's been doing, you know. You know, we'll see Torrey Craig's face injury here, JR. You know, we know if it's a broken nose or if there's anything more serious than that. But he didn't play in Boston, you know, and Bud just said, well, it's hard to work new guys in. I mean, that really isn't what you expected to hear coming off a game when Craig was signed, you would think, to be a premier wing defender. And he defended no wings for 3 games. So, but yeah, to your point, if they drop 2 in Miami, I mean, that would mean 3 losses to the teams who are in the Eastern Conference Finals to start the year. I think it would be worth revisiting why. Like, is it because DJ Wilson coming in for Giannis and Forbes for Middleton, Connaughton for DiVincenzo, is that initial wave of the second unit, are they still struggling? Are they not complementing the starters left on the floor, right? Is Brooke Lopez suddenly way older than he appeared a year ago? You know, I mean, he hasn't really contributed much offensively. I know he's not asked to, but when you score 7 points as opposed to 12, like that adds up, right? So I think it'd be the manner, if it's worst case, JR, I think it's the manner of how they got there, as opposed to, let's say, they just played well and Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero hit shots. Like, I think it's got to be on the micro almost, as opposed to the 1-4 macro, if you will.
You know, you got to point out, there's a lot going on that's weird in the NBA right now, and it isn't just the Bucks. The Nets look like world beaters for two games, then they lose to the Charlotte Hornets. The Los Angeles Clippers, absolutely a title contender, down by 50 points at halftime. I know Dallas is a good team, but that's wild. You know, the Cleveland Cavaliers are 3-0, the Magic are 3-0. There's obviously going to be some sorting out here, a lot of weird stuff happening early in the year. I think one of the things I guess you could zoom in on with this Bucks team is the play of Giannis himself. I mean, his numbers are still good for two of the three games in particular. His numbers are great, but it doesn't seem like he's really clicking yet. Is that something you're seeing as well, or is that just we have way too high of expectations for the two-time MVP?
No, I mean, I think it's fair to say, you know, his start hasn't been, you know, superb. I mean, the raw numbers are there for sure. He was essentially not really present, you would say, in some ways, the first halves of these games, if you will, and then tried to assert himself. And maybe that's one of the reasons, you know, they're down 17 to Boston after three, down 21 to the Knicks after three, because he was trying to find a way, you know, the outside shot, you know, he's hit a couple threes, hit a couple nice little turnarounds in the post, but it just hasn't really been consistent. And clearly the offensive fouls and the kind of the bull rushes into the lane, that's still there. I think it's fair to say that he hasn't been, you know, sharp to start all these games for sure. I think, you know, shooting percentages are down across and all that kind of thing. And really, Chris Middleton has really kept them in the Boston and New York games, at least to the extent that they were.
We talk a lot about Chris Middleton, or we had last year on the podcast, trying to put into context how great of a player he is. Unquestionably not thought of in a superstar regard outside of Milwaukee, and I would say inside Milwaukee, there was always that buzz about his contract. Is he a guy who's worth his contract? Since signing that max contract, he has been a stud. All last year, he was excellent, and I mean, it's almost like he's taking it to another level. We talked about how there's still room for Giannis to improve. Maybe we underestimated how Chris Middleton has improved. How do you look at him? I mean, you talked about growing up as a Chicago fan. Scottie Pippen's an NBA Hall of Famer. We're not necessarily putting Chris Middleton in that regard yet, but that similar ways in that he is the second fiddle to a superstar, to an MVP caliber player. Perhaps that leaves him as an underappreciated guy. He was a bit of an underdog story. Pippen wasn't, you know, a late draft pick by any means, but he came from a small college, and Chris Middleton is a guy who rose up gradually, did not come into the league as a star. And I do think that sort of, you know, prevents people from really understanding how good he is. Man, the first three games to start the year, it seems to me like that guy, man, he's awesome. I wish more people understood how awesome. How do you evaluate Chris Middleton?
You know, usually you don't see eighth, ninth year players looking like they're improving. I'm one to say sometimes, JR, that, you know, if you're 24 in the NBA, there's a chance that you kind of are who you are, depending on the player, you know, because it's that guy may have been in the league for 6 years at that point. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
the fact that Middleton, especially this late as he hits or gets close to age 30, you know, is still finding ways to get better. And really, you know, it's funny you mentioned the Pippen comparison to a degree. You're right. I mean, Middleton's clearly a better shooter. Pippen was an all-world defender. Middleton's not bad, but Middleton is kind of a throwback. I mean, people like to kind of joke hashtag mid-range, but he could kind of eat in an area of the court, JR, that teams don't really use anymore. I mean, it's, as we know, it's 3-point or paint, and then there's Chris Middleton, right? kind of exists in this area in between. And you're right. He has started off really well, and I think that bodes well for this team offensively if he can kind of be that guy throughout. I guess it's fair to say, like, why would he regress, right? Why would he not kind of keep on this track? I'm sure he'll have off nights, but if Giannis improves, like we would expect, like we talked about, and Chris Middleton can keep doing what he's doing, then all of a sudden, the Jrue Holiday edition is, I think, highlighted even more, because now you have, I think at first, one of our early podcasts here, we said, I thought maybe Holiday replaces Middleton sort of in the All-Star conversation. And, if Middleton is this good and this consistent, maybe all three of them can get in there, and Middleton is kind of establishes himself as this really, really nice sort of two-way player.
Yeah, let's talk more about Holiday too. 25 points in that opener against Boston, to only 12 points against Golden State, but very efficient, 6 of 8 shooting. This guy looks everything like what the Bucks would have hoped for. I mean, he is quick, he is smooth, he facilitates. Like a lot of guys, he maybe wasn't at his best against the Knicks, but whatever. We need to just burn that game film. What do you see from Holiday? I mean, it seems like it's coming exactly as you said on the last podcast, as advertised.
You mentioned the Golden State game. I think, three quarters of the game was over. So the Bucks scored 100 points in three quarters, and 28% of those of that offense ran through Jrue Holiday's hands one way or the other. And I think that shows what he can do when he's kind of dictating, running the offense. He's ambidextrous. I think, you kind of get used to really good ball handlers. Like, oh, their offhand is pretty strong. And then you kind of find out that, wait a minute, in the paint, Jrue Holiday's left hand is almost automatic. And then, he can also fire, passes from the baseline to Dante DiVincenzo out on the wing, left-handed as well. And you just sort of seeing these things that maybe led him to that sort of same underrated conversation that Chris Middleton's in, where he's like, wow, he is that good. But now that we get to see it on a daily basis, I think now in terms of the Knicks game, though, his shooting did fall off. He scored 8 points early and then didn't score again. And I don't think it was a coincidence, JR, that the offense kind of sputtered. And that's, with Giannis starting slow, the bench really not producing much, Lopez underperforming offensively, at least compared to the last couple of years. If Holiday has an off night like he did, I mean, clearly the Bucks are in trouble, because at least through this point, the big three have really had to carry them, offensively.
Right now, the Pat Connaughton offseason situation is maybe not as spotlighted as other things that the Bucks did this offseason. I feel like we're headed toward a collision where this is the new Malcolm Brogdon conversation. A lot of people nationally and locally still think the Bucks made a huge mistake not bringing back Malcolm Brogdon, and who knows how the dominoes fall if they do, but the re-signing of Pat Connaughton to a pretty lucrative 3-year deal is already looking a little dicey. It seems like he's a guy that, Coach Mike Budenholzer really, really likes having around. And, he's an energy guy and he's done some good things in the past, but it doesn't seem like he's going to be a contributor yet. He's getting pretty significant minutes off the bench. So give me your impression of Pat Connaughton to this point.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of hit it on your head. I mean, right now, he was sort of, and not unjustifiably, I mean, given the bench mob captaincy, if you will. I mean, he's the holdover, right? The guy who's the linchpin of a totally revamped bench. You know, supposed to know the expectation. It was interesting after that first game in Boston when Torrey Craig didn't play. And we asked Bud about it, and he said, well, you know, it's hard to work in some new players. He'll get his chance. You know, DJ Wilson coming in for Giannis, Pat Connaughton coming in for Chris. And what's been interesting, though, is Pat Connaughton hasn't come in for Chris Middleton. He's come in for Dante DiVincenzo, at least as we record this podcast through three games. So that's been the sub. Bryn Forbes has been the one who subs out for Middleton. And maybe, I don't know, maybe there's a one-for-one there. But, I mean, generally when I was going through the rotations, that's kind of how it's shaken out. Like, Middleton and Connaughton have been on the floor quite a bit. And, yeah, he hasn't made any shots. He hasn't been very successful on his drive. So I think when the energy guy isn't scoring 8 points when kind of needed, JR, it kind of shows like, wait a minute. And then you throw in the fact Boston shoots 45% from beyond the arc. New York shoots almost 60% from beyond the arc. And you had a guy in Torrey Craig where you're like, wait a minute, why? Like, he's supposed to be the one that helps this sort of wing perimeter defense. He's not playing. Pat Connaughton is. I think some of that turns into that's Pat Connaughton's problem. You know what I mean? And I know on social media, Bucks fans are kind of going nuts again with Bud's rotation. But I'll just say this, JR, you mentioned here at the top. I mean, John Horst signed into a 3-year deal. I mean, clearly the front office and the head coach are aligned on the player, right? So, you know, I don't know if this is just an instance of a guy kind of starting a little slow or if he's being misused and Mike Budenholzer hasn't quite figured out how to properly use him to start this season.
Yeah, from a contract perspective, of course you would put the Connaughton contract, give it more minutes than you would give the Torrey Craig contract. But I don't think that's how Bucks fans viewed this offseason. I think they feel Connaughton is a sort of the one luxury piece that they brought back, and everybody else is going to slot ahead of him. But seeing Craig's minutes, and you've alluded to it twice now, not be anywhere near, you know, didn't play against the Celtics, played only 3 minutes against the Knicks. Of course, he did leave that game early after getting smacked in the face, but very limited, you know, opportunity for Torrey Craig, who, like you said, is supposed to be a defensive guy that you would think would have a lot of value coming in off the bench. And anything else on the bench that surprises you? I mean, maybe that's just an opportunity to talk more about the Craig situation. Or you see a lot of minutes for Bobby Portis, which makes sense. Again, we talked about there aren't a lot of bigs on this team, and Bobby Portis is really kind of that sixth guy in the rotation at this point. Anything else jump to mind?
I mean, it makes sense that Bobby Portis has been the sixth man in through three games, you know, replacing Brook Lopez. I think you're seeing the potential there and why he was brought in. I mean, he adds speed, a little bit of length. He can make the occasional mid-range outside shot, you know, and be, you know, an energy guy. I think what's interesting with the Connaughton Craig situation, look, Craig is not a offensive player, right? Like, he's the guy who, you know, you think you, again, this goes back to Boston. Like, you would think he's the guy that was going to be out there in crunch time for Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, right? But he wasn't. But I don't know if that's because the offense was struggling and Bud sees it as like, well, Pat Connaughton can make a three. He can get to the basket. Like, he can give us more offensively. And maybe because the bench as a group isn't really producing, DJ Wilson not really scoring it. You see him active on the offensive glass, but too often you see the ball actively bounce off his hands out of bounds or to the other team. Like, he hasn't, I mean, the team is offensive rebounding better. They're given that green light thus far and it's been effective. But if you look at it, you know, again, DJ Wilson's not scoring. DJ Augustin missed the first game, hit some threes against Golden State, less effective. Bryn Forbes hit some threes against Golden State like everybody else, but hasn't really made much and the two losses. So I wonder if that's where the Connaughton thing is kind of coming in, where there's already some established chemistry with the starters he's playing with, and the other guys just haven't found either their role, a comfort level, or just they haven't found their shot yet. I think it is early. Now, I guess what would be disconcerting is if they go through this Miami series and come home to play the Bulls on New Year's Day, and Bryn Forbes still is not finding a stroke on the road, you know, or if DJ Augustin can get to the basket, but maybe he's not hitting that outside shot. Because then I think you're going to see more of Pat Connaughton in that instance. Same thing with DJ Wilson. Like, if he's the first sub in for Giannis, JR, like, I think he needs to be more than just active. Like, you need more than just seeing number five jump around and be in the mix. Like, you need to see him with some dunks, the occasional three, right? And we just, through three games at least, we haven't seen that. And I think that's put some undue pressure on the starters.
Which of the two draft picks, Jordan Wara, it is Wara, right? You don't pronounce the N, is that correct?
I believe so.
Jordan Wara, Sam Merrill, both of those guys bring something to the table. Sam Merrill's kind of just a shooter, but there's value there. And Jordan Wara is probably the better all around player. But it's hard. I'm trying to figure out which one of these guys is going to get popular, because with the limited bench, with one guy short, those guys are going to get playing time. So who do you think is going to be the bigger contributor?
I think it's going to be Merrill, just because his skill set and the reason he was drafted was the outside game. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny. We mentioned being being 24 years old, and you kind of are who you are if you're 6 years into the league. Well, Sam Merrill's 24. He's a rookie. And he even said that himself. In the first, his first sort of meeting with Milwaukee media, he flat out said, he's like, well, I am who I am. Like, this is me. Like, there's some ways I could get better, but this is who I am, and who he is a shooter. And I think Wara might be more of the project, you know, maybe if DJ Wilson departs after this year, Craig departs after this year, you know, Portis is, I think that's where he fits in. Merrill's the one. I mean, look, they gave him late first half run against the Celtics. Now, maybe they didn't like what they saw, and that's why he's been kind of buried these last two games. But, you know, he's made his shots. I would think, you know, to me, if Bryn Forbes and Augustin and DiVincenzo, like, if the three ball isn't falling early in Miami, I don't see why Merrill wouldn't get a little more run if you think he can match up a little bit, you know, defensively. Teams are going to go at him. You know, that's the trade-off. You know, is he's got to prove he can play good team defense in occasional, you know, solid kind of one-on-one situation. But, you know, at least according to Bucks fans, JR, I mean, you know, these guys are already super popular and should be playing a ton. And I think, I don't know. I mean, to me, this isn't the NFL. I mean, late second round picks, Mr. Irrelevant. Like, if you're counting on those guys, then you have really big problems. Like, there's no disrespect to them, but you know what I mean? Like, if you're – they're not the number five pick, the 15 pick. these are guys who are on the team because they don't make a lot of money, and they got to fill it out at this point. So, yes, I think Merrill contributes sooner. I think he does have an NBA skill set. Wara, I think, has some potential. But let's be honest. I mean, we've run through the free agent acquisitions – And if Giannis gets rolling, these guys, you know, if it goes the way it's supposed to, Jared, I mean, we're supposed to see them like we did against Golden State in New York, you know, when the score is 20 plus, you know, either way, for the Bucks.
Wara could have been ACC Player of the Year. The Bucks had some success taking a former ACC Player of the Year in the second round with, of course, Malcolm Brogdon. He did not win the award. Trey Jones of Duke got that one, But I am interested to see how he develops. Totally agree with you, though, that Sam Merrill is the guy for right now, and the short term we'll see. We'll see where Wara develops, and it could be into something, but probably more of a rotational guy at best is what you're looking at there. As far as the everything else, I think that's all the questions I had. But what else is catching your eye right now through three games of the season?
Well, you know, I'd like to see in Miami JR, if there are some, and I wrote about this in terms of the Giannis and Chris Middleton talking about in the preseason, a need to adjust and change in the regular season. You know, Giannis referenced this sort of stretch, the back-to-back against the same opponent. You know, Chris Middleton said, hey, you know, you still got to play the regular season to get to the playoffs, but in order to win in the playoffs, you have to adjust. Now, adjust, change, to me, I mean, the definition of those words changes on a game-to-game basis, and I think that's their point, is what's working, what's not, what can change. I mean, Mike Budenholzer is here for a reason. He's a head coach for a reason. He believes in his system. They're not just going to suddenly abandon the thing that drives Bucks fans crazy, right? Which is what we've seen through three games, a lot of open threes, all that other stuff. But I guess what I'm curious is what do we see going forward here in this next week? What does change? Is there something drastic or noticeable, or do the guys sort of drill down into the film work on an off day and you're not seeing so much sagging on the weak side? Where you like it's still the tenets of the offense or the defense, but maybe not as, you know, leaving it sort of wide open where that corner three or that wing three is just left for Tyler Hero, you know? So I'm curious. That's what I'm curious to see is what's coming in this next week against Miami. Because let's face it, Jared, I think they should just run the Bulls out of the gym, regardless of whatever they do. So I think if we're doing this again in a week and they've lost to the Heat, and then for whatever reason the Bulls pull a Knicks and shoot 58% from the floor, I mean, then we might be having a much more you know, depressing podcast in a week as opposed to what we're talking about now, which is just like I still think it's gonna take some time. I do think they win, you know, a couple of these games here in the coming week, JR. I do. And if they're 3-3 at the start of the new year, like I said, you know, hey, then I'll just, you know, I'll run to the bank on that one.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they'll win at least one of these two Heat games, get back on track. Everybody will calm down. But this is definitely not a scenario people envision that, oh, they'll sign Giannis and then they'll struggle. That doesn't make sense. So Bucks fans maybe on edge a little bit right now, but obviously a lot of time, a lot of runway here, and a lot of Bulls Pistons games on the schedule in the near future. That should make everything right as rain. He is Jim Ozarski. He writes for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering the Milwaukee Bucks. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. Jim, thanks for joining us. We will chat again next week.
Yeah, sounds good.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. Let us know what you think, especially now that we've got the new guy, Jim Ozarski, along for the ride on this podcast. My name again is J.R. Radcliffe. Thanks for tuning in. We will catch you again next week.